Hi, Steve Pomerantz here, host of On the Money with today's On the Money Extra, where we feature market updates and insights as well as guest interviews with noted financial experts to help you stay informed and learn the facts to make the right decisions about money. So let's get started. After the recent violent volatility of last week, I've asked Sam Stovall, Managing Director of U.S. Equity Strategy, S&P Capital IQ, and consummate market historian to join me to get some needed perspective. Sam has been a regular guest on this show. Hey, Sam, welcome back.
Good to talk to you again, Steve.
So now that you've had a little time to digest last week's wrenching moves down and then up, what do you think caused the large drop in the stock market on Monday, August 24th?
Well, I think it was a combination of things. We, about a year ago, started seeing a decline in oil prices. At first, we were sort of dismissing that as really being a supply-demand imbalance where we were just having too much supply, not really acknowledging that the demand equation was also being affected. Then as time went on and we saw that China seemed to be slowing down, then in a sense we were pointing to China as the culprit, one of the reasons why the demand was declining for oil prices. Add to that what we call a profits recession, in that S&P Capital IQ is forecasting that S&P 500 earnings will go nowhere in 2015, so a 0% change. And then finally, I think the Fed indicated that it was getting cold feet as to whether it would begin its rate tightening program in September, as most people had anticipated. And I think all of those three things together was the straw that broke the camel's back.
But we saw some tremendously steep moves both down and up. I mean, in my view, it doesn't even seem humans can cause the market to go from down 1,000 to down 200 or trade a 700-point swing in milliseconds. That's got to be computers. Do you have any opinion on that?
It certainly seemed as if it was computer-driven to me as well. When you look at where the market closed on Friday, August 21st, we dropped down to what technicians would call a support level at 1970. That was versus the prior day's close at 2035, which was also at a support level. And then on the 24th, we went down to 1893. So it just seemed awful coincidental that a lot of these stopping points were right on top of what technicians call support levels,
yeah,
or basically areas where you had a lot of people step in to buy. And so, yes, I would tend to say that it seems as if there was a lot of computer-driven trading going on.
Yeah, in other words, the computers are looking at this going, well, here is a number, and at this number, it will create some trigger, whether a buy or a sell, and it's computers doing the action, right?
That's correct,
okay.
Yes.
And when you say these numbers, you're talking about the S&P. So many people are still used to quoting the Dow, but when you say 2035 or 1970 or 1893, that's the benchmark number, the number on the benchmark index of the S&P 500, right?
That's correct, yes. I work for S&P Capital IQ, so probably no surprise I focus on the S&P.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be talking about the Dow too much. All right, so I know your team was looking for a pullback. Was a healthy correction overdue?
Oh, absolutely. We went 47 months without a decline of 10% or more, versus the average duration between such declines at 18 months since World War II. Mm-hmm. So we were way more than three times as long as we normally are, and so it was definitely overdue. I just couldn't say exactly when it was going to be triggered, but it did not come as a surprise.
You put the market in correction territory between a loss of what numbers, percentage-wise?
Well, what I do is I try to sort of compartmentalize things like most humans. What I call a pullback is a decline of 5 to 10%. A correction is 10 to 20%. And then a bear market is 20% or greater.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons that I do that is because if you lose 5%, then you have to gain back 5% to get back to break even. However, if you lose 20%, you need 25% to get back to break even.
Yeah.
So the magnitude of recovery increases the deeper you fall.
You know, I did some research of my own looking at one-year rates of return going back to 1970 on a rolling basis. And I discovered that the markets traded between a negative 5 and a plus 5 range, because at that time, the market was very ranging. It hadn't actually gone down a lot. And I noticed that about 15% of the time, the market traded for 1 year returns, traded between this negative 5 and this positive 5. Does that ring any bells for you, or do you think that's consistent with your numbers?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, what it really just implies is we have volatility. If you go back to 1960, what you find is that in every rolling 12-month period, you have about 60 days in which the S&P rose or fell by 1% or more. Since 2000, that number jumped to 80 on average. Yet over the last 12 months, we are still slightly below that long-term average going back 55 years. So yes, I would tend to say that the market continuously tries to hover around what it calls fair value, overshooting to the upside, overshooting to the downside. So being within plus or minus X percent sounds pretty reasonable to me.
You know, in a recent post, you stated that while you encourage investors to have an appropriate exposure to equities based on their investment goals, time horizons, and levels of risk tolerance, you also reminded them that usually late in bull market cycles, not to go too far out on the risk curve. What does that mean?
Well, what I mean by that is the longer we go out into a bull market, what we find is that investors become a lot more complacent, confident that dips are going to be purchased. And so maybe because they feel that they got into this bull market a little bit late, they're willing to have more exposure to equities than, let's say, their age, their risk tolerance, how jittery they can be, as well as their time horizon, the time required to get back to break even. And so what we find is that late in 1999, late in 2007, people had a lot more exposure to stocks than they normally would have. And therefore, it was almost as if they went too far out on a tree branch and it ended up breaking behind them and they didn't really have the opportunity to get back to the safety of the tree.
Yeah, it's a tough decision today because with interest rates so low, the fixed income, you know, market or the rates or the returns on the fixed income market are going to be quite low. And yet it seems like the only place where there is any earnings and earnings growth at somewhat reasonable prices is the stock market. So is this a special time, you think, to add a little bit more risk to the portfolio because of that?
Yes, I guess adding risk in terms of exposure to equities, but maybe you can play it a little bit safer by gravitating toward those companies that have an above-average consistency of raising their earnings and dividends.
Mm-hmm.
Here I'm doing a shameless plug. S&P has something called the Earnings and Dividend Quality Rank. It's a letter grade. A minus A, A plus are those companies with above-average consistencies of raising earnings and dividends in each of the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did, I wrote an article a couple of weeks back called Sleep Quality. If you want to get a good night's sleep, focus on quality because take a look at the rolling 12-month income distribution, and it'll look like an up escalator in a department store rather than the EKG diagram that you typically would get looking at the price. So if you are an income-oriented investor, close the eye that looks at the volatility of price, but keep open the eye that focuses on the annual income stream, and you will be amazed as to how smooth that upward ride has been.
You know, I learned that lesson years ago, but before I tell you that little story, you know, we did have one client that called us on that last Monday to sell everything, and I wouldn't do it. and so luckily, she came to her senses and listened to me, and, you know, now obviously we got a quicker rebound than I thought. I didn't think it was going to happen so quickly. But, you know, what is your team's view of an investor's correct reaction when it comes to this kind of volatility?
Well, first off, I hope your client thanked you for being that second line of defense to basically be her conscience to say, do you really want to do this?
Yeah.
I mention that because another reason why I break declines into 5, 10, 15% levels is because it gives you an idea of how long it takes to get back to break even. We have had 90 times since World War II that the market fell by 5% or more. Between 0 and 5%, I just call that noise. But as I mentioned, we've had about 60 declines of 5 to 10%, about 20 declines of 10 to 20%, and then 12 bear markets. So the amazing thing is that 90% of all declines of 5% or more got back to break even in an average of 4 months or fewer.
Yeah.
So you really don't want to become your portfolio's worst enemy by bailing out at a point in which it probably ends up being the low.
That's right. This ability to time the market, even Warren Buffett says he can't time the market and he does not count on that kind of a strategy to create the wealth that he's created.
That's right. He focuses on 10-year time horizons, and he says he is very confident that prices will be higher, if not a lot higher. And so I looked at it as well and found he's absolutely right. Looking at individual years going back to World War II, the market has been up 80% of the time on a total return basis.
Yeah.
Those people who think investing is gambling, please tell me which casino pays the gambler 80% of the time. Mm-hmm. And on a rolling 10-year basis, 97% of all rolling 10-year periods have been in positive territory, with the average compound annual growth rate being a shade below 12%, which is an amazing number.
Yeah, so if you let the market do its thing, you get those kinds of numbers. If you intercede as an investor and think that you can outwit the market by buying and selling, in effect, you are creating casino-like conditions. Now you're speculating. So get speculating out of the game and just let the economy and therefore those companies that are invested in the economy do their magic. Do you think that this correction leads to early signs of a bear market?
Well, first off, the correction is not done yet. I think that if we don't end up retesting the recent low and maybe even go a little bit lower, that yes, it could be setting us up for a bear market in 2016 or whenever. I say that because the market needs to go through pullbacks and corrections to reset the dials, to, in a sense, bring people's expectations back into normal ranges, etc. So one of the concerns that we had was that whether you look to trailing or projected earnings, that we were trading at best equal to long-term averages, but really more above long-term averages. The most recent decline only brought the P/E ratio on forward 12-month earnings back to the long-term median. So we really only got back to the average rather than overshooting as the market tends to do.
Yeah.
So I would tend to say we need to dip a little bit more to make me feel as if the dials truly had been reset.
Most of the battle has to do with managing expectations. And I'm glad that you said what you just said, because if everybody thinks that the storm has passed and this is over, I think there's a good possibility that this is going to happen again. But now that you know that it's part of a greater process of correcting, some say it's taking the market out of the weak hands, those who've come in late who are speculating, and putting it back in the hands of the strong. Whatever the method is, the bottom line is expect another pullback. Keep the one eye open on earnings, on dividends. Keep the other eye closed on the market volatility. My guest is Sam Stovall. He is the Managing Director, U.S. Equity Strategy of the S&P Capital IQ. And as you can see, he's a real well-known and well-respected market historian. To find out more about Sam and to hear this interview again, don't forget to join the conversation at onthemoneyradio.org. So, I know the future is hard to predict, but besides that we may get a correction again, what do you think is going to happen in the near term right now?
Well, after we do finally go through the volatility, history says that if we have a month of August in which the market has declined by 5% or more, chances are that we end up having another slight decline in September, the average price decline being a shade less than 4%. So with September being a traditionally volatile month, don't think that everything is behind us. However, take a look at what the rule of 20 says the stock market should be trading at. I look at not only P/E ratios, but also inflation. If you add the two together and they equal 20 or less, you have a fairly valued or undervalued market. So this rule of 20 says that based on a 1.8% core CPI or inflation reading combined with earnings of about $118 for the S&P 500, we could close the year around 2140, so slightly above the all-time high set on May 21st of this year.
Explain that again, because you went kind of fast. I understood the inflation part, right? 1.8% is the core inflation rate. But then you started, instead of talking about PEs, you mentioned about S&P earnings.
Right.
So what is the PE on those earnings?
It's a very simple calculation. 20 minus inflation times earnings, period.
Oh, 20 okay.
Minus inflation times earnings will tell you that, okay, well, based on this rule of 20, mm-hmm. let's remove the inflation component to then see what is the, in a sense, underlying PE that this inflation level could support. A lot of people will say, well, Sam, why don't we go down to a single-digit PE like we did back in the early 1980s? Mm-hmm. Don't we have to do that before the market can advance? And my answer is absolutely not. The reason why the price-to-earnings ratio went below 10 back in the early 1980s was because inflation was above 14%.
Right.
Today, inflation is less than 2%. So it's like a scale. If inflation is down, then PEs can be up, and you will not have a mispriced market.
Now, if we start to see inflation tick up, then this formula changes the outcome to a lower stock market.
Absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. Yes. So that the higher inflation goes, the less of a PE that the market can support.
Very good. That's something to keep our eye on. My guest, Sam Stovall, Managing Director, U.S. Equity Strategy for S&P Capital IQ. And don't forget to hear this segment again to find out more about Sam. Join us at onthemoneyradio.org. Thanks very much for joining us, Sam.
My pleasure, Steve.
You're listening to On the Money with Certified Financial Planner Steve Pomerantz. If you'd like information about guests, topics, or anything you hear on this program, call 866-MONEY01 or visit the show's website at onthemoneyradio.org.